This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
With the first selection in the 2009 first-year player draft, the Washington Nationals select Steven Strasburg, right-handed pitcher from San Diego State University, San Diego, California.
This weekend, it became official, Steven Strasburg retiring from Major League Baseball. Not a surprise. This was a formality, but now the team and Strasburg no longer at odds. Ideally, he will be at the five-year anniversary celebration of the World Series with his teammates on the next homestand. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on the Fan. Kick off your future with the law firm of Condorian Murrah. They're the official show sponsor here at G&D. They'll help protect your assets, update your will and your trust, schedule a free estate planning strategy with one of the Fairfax attorneys that they've got in their office. And you can check them out online, kmlawyers.com. If you mention us, you'll get a discount. That's kmlawyers.com. Dave Jagler, one of the voices of Nats baseball. You hear him every night here on The Fan. He'll be at one of the great ballparks in America in San Francisco tonight on the call of the Nats and the Giants, joining us out west where it is still morning time. Is it eclipsing out there yet? I think things happen differently on the west, right?
No, man. We're in the wrong path, guy. It's a beautiful blue sky out here in San Francisco, so... Yeah, we're not in the line of fire here, unfortunately.
You will not get to see that.
The line of totality, whatever it's called.
Exactly. That's right. Yeah, we just had Ryan break it all down for us here in studio.
He did a great job.
We're up to speed now and everything that's going on.
Nice.
Jags, Strauss, it's official. Retirement. Legacy is what?
Legacy is one of the greatest players in our franchise. I mean, World Series MVP and a guy who I think 37 will be never worn again. So that's the simple answer to that question. One of the greatest to ever put on the Nationals uniform.
Jags, when did it turn for him? And what I mean is, when did it go from exciting future, the prospect? We all remember the debut, some of your incredible calls against Pittsburgh and how much fun that was, subsequent injury. And there was always this sense of it's going to be great. When did it actually become the thing that we were promised? Does that make sense? It turned from almost to then it was.
Yeah. I mean, I'll give you kind of a long answer to that because I don't know the exact moment, but it's an interesting point you bring up because obviously he came up and he was dominant right away. And those were some of the most memorable moments of my career, that first game. And then we go to Cleveland for his second start and they have like 15,000 there for a Saturday night. He pitches on a Sunday afternoon and it's sold out.
Yeah, Beatlemania.
There's an entire, just a concession kiosk of Strasburg merchandise in the than Indians ballpark. It's like, you don't see that. You don't see a road player having his jersey, you know, draped all over their ballpark. It was insane. But what it did was it set an unrealistic expectation, and he spent very little time in the minor leagues. And when he first came up, obviously he dominated, but then, you know, as the league adjusts, he had to learn some things. Like, he never knew how to hold a runner. He didn't have any runners on base against him in college or in the minor leagues. And he had to learn how to deal with adversity, in that he struggled early in his career. Like, he would make the perfect pitch and there'd be a jam shot base hit, and he would see the shoulder slump and like, well, that shouldn't have happened. Well, it took him a little bit of time to kind of just grow and mature. And unfortunately, he had to do that at the big league level with all these eyes on him because of that, you know, initial just groundswell of attention when he came up. So it's hard to pick out the moment when it really happened, but it was a gradual thing. And, you know, most guys go through that process either in the minor leagues, or there's not that much of a microscope on him as you deal with that maturing process going through the major leagues. So, I mean, when it all kind of came to fruition, and he had some very, you know, very nice season in 2014, and you know, missed the postseason in 16 because he was injured. But it kind of all came together in that Cubs series when he had that performance with the Nationals facing elimination, and he was sick the day before, and he went out and he was unhittable when the Nationals needed him to be at his best. That's when he said, "Man, this guy has fully arrived." So it was a gradual. It was kind of like an eclipse going over the length of the land, but it took a while. Ultimately, it got there, and that foreshadowed what we saw in 2019 with that just truly remarkable postseason run that he had.
Dave Jagler on Grant and Danny. I remember being in Altoona, Pennsylvania for his first ever pro start, April 11th, 2010. I drove with a couple of buddies from college, sat behind the screen. They got a pretty cool roller coaster out behind the right field wall in Altoona, Pennsylvania, and it's a pretty neat little ballpark in the mountains, and Stras made his pro debut that day and was touching 100 miles an hour. And just that ballpark was, for a minor league game, it was crazy. It was electric, and it was, you see this all the time now with guys like Paul Skeens or when Dylan Cruz debuts in Fredericksburg or whatever, but that wasn't really a thing back in 2010 yet. I mean, the prospect culture and industry was just launching. What do you remember about the hoopla leading up to that first start? Not even the night itself, but just the idea that finding out, okay, Strasburg's going to pitch at home against Pittsburgh, and like just how big of a deal it was for everyone trying to get their hands on tickets.
Yeah, I mean, every minor league start was a big deal. I mean, they tried to line up his starts when he was at Syracuse in AAA back then. Syracuse was our affiliate, and they kind of lined him up to pitch most of his games at home. And that made like two seasons for them. The fact that they filled their ballpark on a random Tuesday night for his start against Rochester or something. So yeah, it was a big deal. And like I said, just the attendance on the road was what really stood out. We knew his starts at home were events. He had the first start against Pittsburgh with the incredible buildup. And in that start, as he struck out the side in the sixth and the seventh inning, the one thing about baseball is the great saying, you never know. Like, you never know what's going to happen. I felt as certain as I ever have of any result in baseball that he was going to strike out. As he got to two strikes, oh, he's going to strike this guy out. He's going to strike this guy out. And it just seemed so automatic what he was going to do. And it was tremendous to watch. Second start was at Cleveland. Third start is at home against Chicago White Sox. President Obama's in attendance. And I remember there was an inning in that game where he had a 3-up, 3-down inning with 3 ground outs. And there was an audible groan of frustration from the crowd. How dare he have a 3-up, 3-down inning with no strikeouts? And that kind of tells you what I was saying earlier, the kind of the impossible expectation level that he walked into. And, you know, as that season went along, he had a start in Atlanta where, you know, again, it was a third full the night before, totally filled when he started. Then the home start where he gets scratched before the game, and the entire crowd boos when they announce Miguel Batista as the starter. And Batista goes out and throws 5 innings and gets the win, and has the famous Miss Iowa quote. So that always became the Miss Iowa game. It may not be Miss America, but Miss Iowa is pretty nice too. And then we had to have Miss Iowa come to a game later in the season. But that 2010 was real heady stuff. Unfortunately, you knew it was sad when it ended in Philadelphia when he threw that changeup, and you could see the grimace. And Steve McCaddy calling to the bullpen and slamming the door of the bullpen phone in the dugout. You knew it was bad, and you knew he was going to be down for a while. And it wasn't quite the same level of, you know, just microscope around the league when he came back a year later. And then ultimately that led to the shutdown situation in 2012, which is part of the narrative. And obviously we went on from there.
So, and Dave Jagger with us here on Grant and Danny. I want to get to him off the field a little bit, Jags, because, you know, Grant and I were around the team a lot, especially more so when we were doing middays, but nowhere near as much as you and Charlie, right? You guys are traveling with them. You're embedded with these guys in a lot of ways. And Strauss would rather, you know, eat a scorpion than talk to Grant and I at spring training or otherwise. He didn't owe us anything, and that's totally fine. It's part of who he was. But what was he like away from the media kind of in general, right? I mean, I had other players that, you know, they played with him for a number of years, talk about how great a teammate he was, how thoughtful he was, how funny he was, kind of, you know, behind the scenes, a great dude. We didn't get to see much of that. I'd love for you to go into that a little bit, Strauss away from the bump.
Yeah, and he didn't necessarily show that to us as the broadcasters, because we were not teammates. I mean, I think there was a dividing line there clearly, mm-hmm. that if you were a teammate, you were in, and if you weren't, then you were outside that little circle. And maybe we were a little more in the circle than you guys or the Washington Post or whoever, but he kind of had that line, and that's fine. That's what it was. But yeah, he had a very sarcastic, dry sense of humor that if you knew him well, he might show it to you. But if you didn't, you weren't going to see it. And I think that, you know, I know Davey Martinez was reflecting on this yesterday, kind of how Anibal Sanchez, Gerardo Parra brought him out of his shell a little bit just in the public eye in the 2019 season. When he hit the home run in Atlanta, well, at that point, you had to dance the conga line, because that's what everyone did when they hit a home run. And Strasburg, you know, as he said, you know, kind of dryly postgame show, I'm not much of a dancer. Well, he had to dance the conga line. And then the famous, you know, slow dances that they were doing after the dominant postseason start. So that was kind of just a little glimpse into what it was. But he was just so incredibly focused and single-minded on his craft. I was watching a clip of Mark DeRosa, who was with the Nationals in 2012, was on MLB Network this morning. He was talking about, I'm coming back from the golf course, and every time I see Strauss, he's dripping in sweat whenever I see him. He was always working and striving to get better, so he didn't have a lot of time for that other interaction with media or people who weren't his teammates. So, you know, that was kind of one thing that was difficult for him, because there was so much focus on him. You weren't allowed to talk to him on days he didn't pitch, so he was kind of sheltered. He just wanted to be like every other guy. So very importantly, I think for him, was when Bryce Harper arrived, because that took a lot of the focus and attention off of him. And then obviously Max Scherzer arrived, and Scherzer's an alpha dog, and he's going to front the rotation. So Strasburg could just kind of go about his business and not be bothered as much when he was the number one story.
We're joined by Dave Jagler, one of the voices of Nats baseball, looking back at the career of Steven Strasburg, who, of course, guides the Nats to the 2019 World Series, gets the $245 million contract, throws in just the 30 innings since, but, you know, so much to look back on prior to that contract. I want to talk about the 2019 run, because in diving deep into it on our new episode of Bustin' Loose Baseball last night, we kind of went through his outings. It was so incredible what he did that October. Legitimately, this is not me being a homer as a guy in D.C. It's one of the great playoff runs ever, mm-hmm. for a starting pitcher. But it started, people forget, he came in relief, Danny.
In the Brewers game.
That Brewers wild card game when Scherzer was okay, like he was fine, but they needed length. They didn't really have much in the pen ahead of Doolittle at that point, right? And he gave them three shutout with four Ks, and he was ridiculous that night in that wild card game. And, Jags, that kind of set the tone. He made two starts in the division series that were very good. He struck out a combined 17. He had an unbelievable start in the NLCS where he punched out 12. And then, obviously, he pitches in game six. He's tipping his pitches in the first inning and then adjusts to basically almost throw a complete game and force a game seven, which was his Mona Lisa. But you were there every step of the way calling all those games. Now, what'd you make of his 19?
Yeah, I mean, I'll kind of go step by step. I mean, back in the wild card game, we made a big deal out. He had never pitched in relief in the professional ranks. I think he probably last pitched in relief. He was a closer as a freshman at San Diego State. So you're talking about, you know, 2007. So you're talking about 12 years. And I remember we talked to Eric Fetty the next spring, and Fetty was kind of down in the bullpen, wasn't on the roster, but he kind of noticed that, you know, Scherzer's spot in the lineup was coming up in the bottom of the fifth inning. And he said, hey, Strauss, you better start to get ready, because, you know, Strauss couldn't do his normal, you know, long toss routine and stuff that he would normally do on the field. So he had to alter his routine, and we know how routine oriented he was. So he comes in and he dominates, and obviously you have the great eighth inning rally. And so he pitches on 2 days rest after the Nationals got smoked in game one of that Dodger series. So there was just that one off day to travel. Then they lose game one. He's on the bump in game two facing Kershaw with the Nationals in danger of going down 2-0, and he spun a gem. So, I mean, that was a huge, that was of all the Nationals wins, that's kind of an underrated win.
Yep.
In the whole scheme of things. Hudson had the ninth inning jam where Davey Martinez intentionally walked Muncy. I think it was the winning run on first. He ends up walking the next guy and has to strike out Seager with the bases loaded to preserve game two. But that doesn't happen with Strasburg not dominating and out-pitching Kershaw. And obviously game five, gave up a couple of early runs, hung in there until the Nationals could rally. The Cardinals start was just utter domination. And then game two in the Houston series, other than that being Danny eating everything in the press dining room, that was a very, very close game. It was Verlander against Strasburg, and that was a 2-2 game. Strasburg was in a big jam, I think struck out Tucker with the bases loaded, and then the Nationals exploded. Suzuki hit a home run on the seventh, and they ended up winning in a rout. But that was a nip-and-tuck game the entire way. And then, obviously, pitch tipping. John Toskis, the video guy, telling Paul Menhart, the pitching coach, hey, he's tipping. And Menhart deciding, well, I've got to tell him. I can't just let this continue and lose the World Series. And he was able to kind of flare his glove. And
that he wasn't going to tell him?
That they had that debate.
Oh, yeah. Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to say in the middle of the world, hey, you got to do something different here.
Yeah, change your mechanics.
change this. And if you remember, when he was holding the ball in his glove, as he was going into his windup, he would then repeatedly kind of squeeze his glove back and forth to hide whatever grip he was showing or whatever tell he had. And that change on the fly allowed the Astros not to have what was coming, and they didn't touch him the rest of the night. So, I mean, that was a pretty interesting subplot that came out well after the fact of what he had to do in game six, and ultimately pitches into the ninth inning. And he admitted afterward his arm was hanging after the fifth. He was going on fumes, but boy, he put the team on his back when they most needed it.
It was just incredible. Dave Jagler with us here talking about Steven Strasburg. His stuff as it evolved over the years, he always had that unbelievable hammer curveball, and the changeup was one of the best pitches in the sport. The fastball velocity when he first came up, you talked about it. He was throwing 100, and it was like that wasn't. Now it's like everybody throws 100. It's like who cares? Or even pitching if you don't throw 100. But then it was pretty rare, Dave. But as his career went on, it wasn't about blowing people away anymore. It was about locating and mixing and really and truly pitching. Again, there was kind of a metamorphosis of him throughout his career. Do you think?
Exactly, and that's what I was talking about with what he had to learn. Like he could dominate college hitters and minor league hitters just with pure stuff. Well, I mean, big league hitters can hit a speeding bullet, so you can't just throw one 100 down the middle without, and that's what made him special, is that he could command all three pitches. And we actually referenced this on the broadcast yesterday with so many pitching injuries and the thought that it's max velocity and max spin rate. And Davey Johnson was a consultant when Strasburg broke in. He was not yet the manager. And he said, I wish he wouldn't throw that hard, kind of insinuating that something bad's going to happen. Like, you can't do that on every pitch. Ultimately, he had the Tommy John surgery. He had to learn, and he did learn, that I don't have to throw my max effort fastball every time, and I can still be a successful big league pitcher at 95. I don't have to throw 99. My curveball and my changeup are good enough to pair along with it. So that was, again, something that he had to learn, and ultimately he did, because he was very successful not throwing quite as hard when he was this kind of just phenomenon with the, oh my God, he can throw 100. That's what everyone was just so amazed by when he first broke in. Then his fastball velocity was a tick above average, but he was well above average with the other pitches.
Dave Jagler, Charlie Slows on the call of Nats baseball right here on The Fan tonight, a 9:45 start, which means 9:15 pregame right here on your flagship home for the Nationals. So I guess two-parter. One, thank you for letting us crash the booth on a chilly night over the weekend. And then secondly, is CJ Abrams going to play? I'd like to get him back out there. I'm a little nervous.
I would hope. I mean, the old day-to-day thing, and they gave him the 2 days off. I mean, he seemed to be fine when we saw him on the flight. So that would be the hope. You know, obviously they miss him at the top of the lineup, but it was good to see actually Lane Thomas moving around the lineup seems to have gotten him going. He had two hits in seven games in the two spot. Now he's had two hits in the leadoff spot, two hits in the three spot. But I hope that CJ is back there tonight. Although it's going to be an interesting matchup against the tough lefty, Mr. Snell. We're going to see the Cy Young winner tonight.
Yeah, Skip, my fingers aching a little bit. Maybe I could use one more day. Jags, thank you as always, buddy. Appreciate it.
But if he walks him, Snell allowed 25 steals
last
year. Just take your walks and then steal second. Put the oven mitt on and then steal second. That's what we'd like to see.
Led the league in walks and then let you steal as he's walking double.
That's nice of you. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Jags.
Jags, thanks.
You got it. I enjoyed it. See you.
Good catching up, as always. There's Dave Jagler on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Let's dive into our top memories for Steven Strasburg next here on G&D. Now, at the risk of being a party pooper, okay, I understand that I am risking being that guy.
Where are you going here, dude?
Who's yucking your yum just a little bit. I got to say, I peeked out the window a few times. A little bit disappointing. I was expecting some pitch black, it's midnight at 3 p.m. situation. It's overcast. I mean, I can't tell you how many times sitting in these studios, when it gets real cloudy or it's raining, it looks just like it does right now. Maybe with some rain.
Well, it's not even as dark as one of those like ridiculous summer storm situations.
That's what I'm saying. You
know, yeah, like at 4 p.m. we look outside and it's like, is it midnight right now? No, it's just overcast in D.C.
Now, maybe if you're one of the thousands and thousands of people that I'm seeing posting videos where they all leave their offices and go up on the platform upstairs and you're on the rooftop with your camera out. If you're one of those people, maybe you're seeing something pretty cool right now. It's possible. If you're looking directly at the situation at hand. But if you're just me and you thought it's going to get a lot darker, a little bit disappointed.
Yeah.
This is it?
Yeah, this is pretty much it.
This is what we got. We're past totality, right?
I think so.
If you drove to Buffalo today so that you could be in the town where it gets pitch black, supposedly, there's just no way you feel good about that decision. In fact, one of our buddies, Alexandria Phil, texted me when we were talking earlier about, are you an eclipse guy? Uh-huh. You're not an eclipse guy. He said, call me Mitsubishi, which is a good line.
That's a great bit.
He says, Ryan, do you get the bit? Okay, very good.
I test drove one of those one time.
That's what I wanted growing up. From when I
Dude, they were the hotness. Like if you were a teenager that wanted to go fast.
From when I was probably 7 to when I was 14, I wanted a Mitsubishi Eclipse. He goes, I'm an eclipse guy. I drove to Clemson, South Carolina for the last one to see it in totality. That's aggressive. Only time I've ever driven to Clemson, South Carolina is to see Trevor Lawrence and the boys. I didn't even do that, but I would.
I was going to say, would you have done that?
I would have in the right situation. But somebody somewhere drove like 14 hours to Buffalo today because that was the town supposedly where it was going to be the best.
People get excited about stuff, man. I mean, they're like our very own Jason Bishop, who sits in this chair right here on the Sports Junkies. Like his dream is to chase tornadoes. There's never been anything I have less interest in the world.
I would want to do that too.
Like, good for you. Chase your tornadoes, man. You know, like TLC said, go chase your waterfalls.
You know how good the movie Twister is?
It was fine.
Oh, it was great.
Fine.
The late, great Philip Seymour Hoffman, Helen Hunt, peak of her powers,
mm-hmm.
A white tank top scene in there somewhere. That was a good movie. That's a great movie.
It was fine. The whole premise is flawed because no one should want to do that.
Paxton.
That's your Paxton. Pullman.
Bill Paxton was great.
Pullman, Independence Day.
Yeah.
Paxton, Twister.
Pullman, Newsies. Paxton, Twister.
Ruye, no file on the first one. Paxton, good career. A lot of good stuff from Bill Paxton.
Bill Paxton, stud.
Yeah, starting an alien back in the day. Anyway, but people love if you've got a passion and you're so excited, I'll be on the outside making fun because I think that's so stupid. To drive far to see the eclipse. Like if you go out, if I could peek out my window, look up and go, oh, that's neat. Or stand outside on the front lawn. Oh, that's cool. I'll do it. The idea that you would go that length, I think is just insane, but God bless you. Whatever butters the biscuit.
You sleep on the name of Bill Paxton's
Stop it.
Device that he was trying to get in the air that held all the little balls, the little weather balls.
Uh-huh.
What was the name?
I have no idea. I don't know. I have no idea.
That was Dorothy.
Okay. Have you seen if you've been to a movie theater recently, which I have, I'm a big movie guy. I go more often than you probably. I was in the movie theater recently, again, just the other day as a movie guy. And there was a preview for Twister 2, like the return of the Twister or whatever.
You're the second person to tell me. I found out this weekend this is a thing.
Yeah.
And at that moment, I was on air doing BetQL stuff. And I said, I got to look up the trailer. Uh-huh. I still haven't.
Yeah, look it up.
I need to watch it.
Glenn Powell's in it. And, I mean, he looks great. He looks
How's
great.
How's the movie look?
You know, again, the premise is completely flawed. People are getting close to tornadoes,
yeah,
which is wrong. Get away from them. But these guys are like, this is a great one. You ready? Hold on. You know, that's the movie.
Twister's not quite on my Armageddon level of just movies that I love and think are just all-time great that everyone mm-hmm. sleeps on, but it is close. Aunt May, when they go to Aunt May's house and those, you know, weather chimes are banging around in the front yard and she's making them steak and everyone's giving her a hug and a kiss on the cheek and then they got to go chase the storm and she knows it's their passion and she can kind of see that husband and wife are getting back together a little bit. Great movie. Big, big Twister guy.
It's in my list of movies where my eyes can't roll anymore. You know what I mean? Like, I can't make them roll wider or longer or more full panoramic where I'm just like, come on. Just come on. Get away
so good.
From the tornado. It's so easy. I'm so good at it. Watch me.
That there's a Twister, Dan.
Mm-hmm.
That's a tornado. We're raising in a couple levels.
Yeah, I suppose.
That's a Twister.
This one's called Twisters. Again, very inventive. You just need to know Glenn Powell.
So is this a remake or is this number two?
I think unclear to me. I think it's a sequel.
Okay.
I don't know if it's a direct sequel, but it's, again, it's now it's like young, attractive people who are very excited about terrifying nature smacking you in the face.
I got two words for you.
Okay.
Opening night. I'll be there with bells on.
I got five words.
Well, no. Opening night were the two words.
Yeah, that I know, but then you added bells.
That was
yeah.
Period.
Yeah.
But also, as a second thought, I'll be there with bells on. I think a lot of the people that are going up onto a rooftop at work and getting Susie and Sally and Betsy and Mark and Tim and Tom. Mm-hmm.
Tom's
and walking upstairs, mm-hmm. they just want to stop working for a few minutes.
There it is.
And they're going to do it anyway.
Yeah.
They're just going to go meet in the lunchroom or do something else. But now there's an excuse. If your boss is up there with you, we're all high-fiving together. You're only there 3 days a week as it is. It's Monday, Wednesday, Friday, or mm-hmm. whatever. So here, this gives us an hour. We don't have to do anything.
And you
got to
go at 3. It's almost 3 now.
Exactly.
You
had
leave.
To stay late because totality was at 3:20. So you get into the office for your 3 days a week for 4 hours. Maybe you came in a little later. Maybe you came in at 1. You're going to do 1 to 5. Or one, yeah, that would get you.
Or, you know what, sir? I should probably get on the way home so I can see the totality. It's almost 2. Can I, instead of taking lunch, can I just duck out of here? So I did a 10 to 2 today. I basically did middays at my office today. So most people are doing probably. As they get home in time for the totality.
I think people are excited about the eclipse. There's
probably
some of that. But if you were at home, you'd be less inclined to drop what you're doing that's fun.
Mm-hmm.
Watching TV, playing a video game, doing something with your kids in the basement, whatever it is.
Yeah, so my kids
run outside. When you're at your desk at work, it's just a great reason to leave.
Well, the kids at school, where my kids are in school, are going nuts about it. They can't stop talking about it. It's the most hyped event in school history.
Do they get out of class
to watch it? There
it is. Boom.
I don't think they'd be as excited, to your point. If like my oldest was on Roblox, and my youngest was playing Star Wars Battlefront and poning droids, I don't think he'd be that excited.
Definitely
but
not.
Now because they're in school with like 30 minutes to go, they can't wait to trudge outside and put their glasses on.
Thanks to Jags for reminiscing about Strauss with us a little bit earlier on here this hour. So a couple of things. I tweeted a bunch of thoughts on Strasburg yesterday, but I just wanted to look back at a couple of things about his legacy that I don't think get talked about a lot. You know, locally, Danny, we think of him as World Series hero.
Mm-hmm.
Nationally, I do think he has an important place forever in that he was the first super prospect in an industry that's now been created in an era where that's a thing. Like Mark Pryor was the guy before him that was unbelievably hyped. But there was no Twitter or X. There was no video of every start. You couldn't watch minor league players. I watch every James Wood at bat now because I have it on TV at home on my MLB app. I watched Dylan Cruz yesterday play for Harrisburg. Like, you can do that. That was not a thing when Mark Pryor was coming up. Steven Strasburg when he started pitching. That still wasn't quite to that extent, but you could follow all of his starts on Twitter, live tweeted, what's his velocity, what pitch did he just throw, did he get the guy out or not. He was the first super prospect in that era. I remember the first time I ever talked to him, he was at San Diego State, and he basically told me he had shown up on campus as a teenager who was a pudgy kid. He was like, yeah, actually heavy.
Mm-hmm.
He lost a bunch of weight, went from throwing 90 to throwing 100 under the tutelage of Tony Gwynn and that Aztec staff. I mentioned going to his first ever pro start. I was at Altoona, Pennsylvania, Double-A baseball in the Eastern League, April of 2010. There were two pitchers for the Pirates Double-A affiliate named Jared Hughes and Michael Crotta that were sitting next to me. I went right behind the screen and sat as close as I could. And after every pitch, I would bug them, and I'd say, hey, what was the velocity? And they'd kind of turn their gun to me, and 98, 99, 100, whatever it was. Or, you know, that was a slider. And they, a couple times, kind of marveled at, wow, okay. Because you're a veteran minor leaguer. You're like, sure, I'm sure this,
yeah,
is.
Yeah, okay, buddy, real excited.
But they were pretty blown away.
Mm-hmm.
Now, everybody talks about the first ever game in Nats Park, and they should. But here is what that game meant to me. I'm a diehard Orioles fan, born and raised my whole life. At that point, it's 2010, and I am, let me think, 22 years old. And I remember I was on the beat early on. It was like my first or second year on the beat here at the Fan.
Yep.
CK sent me over there to do reports for LeVar and Dukes. They really didn't talk much Nats at all. That was pre they ever made the playoffs.
Yeah.
They didn't care much about the Nats. And we certainly weren't having reporters over at the ballpark. It was a huge deal. I got over there. Everyone in baseball was there. Bob Costas, Peter Gammons.
I mean, everybody, Grant. Everyone was doing the show from there. MLB yeah. Network was there. The whole deal.
It was the first time that had ever been the case where mm-hmm. the whole sport descended upon the Navy Yard, pre-bars and restaurants, two-year-old ballpark.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just amazing. But I remember being there that night, and forget the 14 strikeouts and all of that. For me, I remember it was the first time, again, as a diehard Orioles fan, the Nats and D.C. baseball didn't exist growing up, where I had a little jealousy about D.C. baseball fans. I was like, wow, this is kind of cool. And the first time that was ever, I was prideful about baseball in my hometown, baseball mm-hmm. in my city. Previously, I kind of viewed the Nats as like the Reds or the Brewers. They were just another team. I was an AL guy. The rules were still different. But that night, I was like, huh, this is kind of awesome. This is my city. This is, you know, the ballpark in my town. This is the team that I could call my own. People actually care. They're not doing crosswords and wearing suits and talking about the deal they struck 2 hours earlier. Like, that was the first night where my paradigm, like, I was open to any kind of thought of, baseball in D.C. could be cool. And that was a big deal for me. And then he pitched the way he did, obviously, which didn't surprise me. You know, you go through that World Series run and all he accomplished. But I said this on BLB with Toby Altizer. Strasburg cemented baseball, in my opinion, as something that would work in this city for me.
That's what it was.
I was still dubious and skeptical. And that night, which I still think rivals anything that happened in any October, any of the years after, in terms of energy in the ballpark, I will take the Strasburg debut night in energy, even with anything that happened in the Nats-Astros three World Series games. But he made the Nationals cool for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
He then made the Nationals good soon thereafter for the first time. And then he won them a title. All those things. And for that reason, I put OV 1 and I put Strasburg 2 in terms of the most important, not best, but most important D.C. athletes in my lifetime. I'm 35 years old. He's number two for me.
The point that you made, I think, that I want to echo more than anything else is that baseball was going to work here. That was a glimpse because they were dreadful. It was Nat Knowles. It was RFK. It was leftovers. It was Jose Vidro.
Burritos on people on accident.
Yeah. You know,
not
it was
top 10 every night.
My college teammate, Mike O'Connor, making double digit starts. No, that's not what it's supposed to look like for a team that has aspirations of being great, with all due respect to my pal. No, it's not Tim Redding. It's not Odalis Perez. It's supposed to look like something else. And when Stras had that epic debut, the whole place was electric, and you go, this is what it could be. It's not there yet, but this is what it could be. For me, a couple other extra memories I wanted to throw out there. Number one, what he did after his debut. It's lost. People have forgotten about it. His next several outings, 5+, one run. 7 innings, one run. 6 innings, one run. 8 strikeouts, 10 strikeouts, 9 strikeouts. Through his first, basically, month of being a big leaguer, or 2 months, really, he had an ERA of 2 even. He was unbelievable. It wasn't the one fluke start against a crappy Pirates team. Because everyone always goes, yeah, the Pirates were terrible. They were awful. That doesn't mean anything. Well, okay. How about you go on the road and shove it against everybody?
Well,
how about you beat all comers?
Dumb anyway.
Well, you know what I mean.
Nobody debuts and punches out 14 over 7 innings. It doesn't happen.
Beating the Mets, beat the Giants, beat the Mar. I mean, everybody was unbelievable. The other one I point out to, and everyone's got the same set of memories I do, but that Cubs series, remember before the mold game, right? That early series, part of the series where they weren't hitting at all and they lost the games here at home. He took a no-hitter deep into the ballgame, gave up 0 earned runs, and struck out 10. And you just knew that they weren't going to hit. You knew they weren't hitting at all. And there he was. In years past, shoulders would have slumped. He would have gone, wow, wow, oh, woe is me. Meltdown would have happened. You know, the whole series would have been thrown into chaos. Instead, all he did was keep them right there with a chance. Now, of course, they couldn't take advantage, and they lost that game, and it was heartbreaking and infuriating and whatever. But he was unbelievable. Even before the mold game, he was 7 innings pitched, no earned runs, and 10 punchies.
Double play comes your way next on Grant and Danny. And at 4 o'clock ahead of the Blitz, Old Glory DC rugby tickets that could be yours. You got to be listening in about 20 minutes on The Fan. I just went into the producer's studio. They've got one of the local TV stations on, and they're checking in with reporters all over the country who just were hanging out with people at these watch parties for the eclipse. And this guy comes on from some festival in Texas.
Okay.
Where they've had like a 3-day-long festival leading up to the eclipse, I guess. And his name, I think it was Jay Gary. It was something that's just like very newsman-y.
Sure.
So anyway, they go out to him, and he's standing there, and I said, Darius, pull the volume up on this. I want to hear what this guy says. And this is literally his opening line. He's like, well, a 3-day-long festival is in the books, and the star of the show certainly was the star that was just covered up by the moon. And it was like, oh, boy. I mean, local TV.
I was looking for self-parody. Anybody have it?
Eat your heart out. It's just such... Every time, man, there's some kind of event. It's just like such a...
What is that?
It's such an anchorman.
You know what I mean, right?
Ron Burgundy.
What is that? Like, who's going, great job? Like, you know what I mean? Who's saying he nailed it?
But to me, that is local television. It's like... I don't know. But that's not how people talk in the world. That's not what anyone's thinking. The star, the star of the show.
Because we got to get our 15-second bite in. And back to you guys.
It was the star in the sky, which disappeared for mere moments. Back to you.
Oh, God.
Ah, that one's
done. Well, another festival has been eclipsed here. Get out of here. I don't get it.
It is time for our double play. What's going on in our lives? Nothing to do with sports. Driven to you by your local Washington area Honda dealers. Stop in for a great deal on the rugged and capable Honda Pilot. Contact your local Washington area Honda dealers today.
I am barely an adult man by any definition, right? I've got a couple of prerequisites, so I'm barely over the threshold. But as you know, I'm not capable of much. We needed a new grill. The Hoorays did, all right? When we moved into our house in 2022, right, we inherited the previous owner's grill. It's on its last legs, your standard issue gas grill, et cetera. It was enough that it just kind of wasn't working right anymore, et cetera. So your boy did some research. I worked. I actually tried to get to the bottom of this. Here is my number one complaint, Jeeps, with the gas grill, okay? It's the gas itself. What do you mean, Danny? I'll tell you. Dealing with the gas, having someone have to come service the gas in the propane tank. Over the wintertime, for example, think back to the New England Patriots and learning about the ideal gas laws. We all became experts overnight about inflated footballs. Just by sitting there and doing nothing and not using our grill over the winter, we would lose half the gas in the propane tank just because of like atmosphere or something. Then you got to wait. They got to come hook it in with some company. I could do it myself, but I don't want to explode anything. It's always a hassle with the gas. I hate the gas.
Even if you do a propane taxi move?
Especially then.
I think it's so easy.
With all due respect to them, it's a great company. That's who I used in the past. It's still always a thing. That's always a problem. There's always something that's going on with the gas, okay? I don't want the gas anymore. I'm out on the gas. And the alternative, you can get one of those little, you know, your charcoal brisket ones, the old school grills like our parents used, et cetera. But again, cleaning that thing up is such a pain in the biscuits. I'm not being paid a single cent for this. I'm telling you, here's what I did. The Traeger. What do you know about the Traeger set of grills?
I know a lot about a Traeger grill, but are you talking about just like charcoal or what are you doing?
They make little wood pellets. These little wood pellets, and you use what you want to use. You don't just have wood pellets that then just go bad because it's cold outside. You can store them in a nice place. They make these little wood pellets. Cost like 18, 19, 20 bucks at Home Depot. You roll in, pick up your bags, you roll out. It's the best. We assembled it over the weekend. I followed the directions and everything. There are widgets. There are washers. There are different kinds of washers. There are little screw things. My wife and I put the whole thing together. Really, I helped her do it. But like, I held things the right way. And we didn't get in any fights. It was awesome. The Traeger grill with the wood pellets. This is, to date, the biggest gamble of my marriage. This is the number one. I insisted upon this. I stumped hard for it. This is my stand on the table for draft pick kind of a situation as a GM. Now my nuts are on the line, okay? This is me. This is my big commitment. Early returns are good. If this works out, I'll be entrusted with more responsibility. I'm excited about it. That's where I'm at.
I need a charcoal option with my grills. I've always kind of done the same grill since I got my first place, which is I go half and half. Like you could do the charcoal one side, the gas on the other.
Mm-hmm.
I think gas is an important option for convenience because it's just so easy and quick. Mm-hmm. Same as a gas stove, if you think about it. Like you turn it on, you get it going, everything's hot fast, you're cooking in no time. My necessity, though, is on a really nice, beautiful Chamber of Commerce postcard day where you're out back, the kids are running around, frolicking and giggling, kicking a soccer ball or whatever. And you can just kind of put Charlie and Dave on your Odyssey app and work the grill a little bit, cook something nice for the family. One of those days, that's a charcoal day. I want to smell the charcoal. I want to taste the charcoal. If I'm just getting home at 7:15 and I want to have, you know, hot dogs and burgers ready, but 7:35, got to go gas.
You get your gas on, get your Quicken in.
But I need the ability to taste, smell. The charcoal's got to be an option for me. So I know of people that swear by the Traeger, and it looks great. They're really, really nice.
So they make
beyond beautiful.
Yeah, I've been thrilled so far. But there are different flavors of wood. You're not eating the wood, but you want a little mesquite. You want a little like a pecan. You want some barbecue. You want like a hickory. Different wood scents are going.
Is it a straight smoker?
No. You've got options to do various things. I'll show you. Ours is not exactly like this. It's different colors up on the top. So we have like a kind of a gold top right there.
Okay.
But it's got that little thing on your right-hand side, my left. That's where the wood pellets go.
That's a smoker.
Yeah. So you grab what you want to grab, and it's kind of using that sort of technology. I'm amazed by how cool these things are.
Well, I look forward to hearing more if this ends up being maybe
if this works,
a win for you.
If this works, imagine there might be some times where I don't have my opinions questioned. You know what I'm saying? Like there's none of those, why did you decide that? It might just be, good job, benefit of the doubt kind of
stuff.
Could
be from the man who brought us the Traeger Ironwood.
Yeah, remember the Traeger is my hope.
He's Danny. I'm Grant. You're listening to The Fan. We got those rugby tickets for you, top of the hour, and we're going blitzing next.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.